This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 1035.
It's Thursday evening, 6 p.m. Thanks for tuning in here to Nova 1035. It's the Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel. And for the next hour or so, we'll be keeping up to date with all the happenings and turmoil in the world markets and here in Namibia as well. We'll start out with a story that's certainly going to create a little bit of pain. The South African Reserve Bank decided to increase the repurchase rate, that's the repo rate, by 75 basis points to 5.5% per year. So that's up from 4.75 to 5.5, and that's with effect from the 22nd of July. Here's South African economist Davie Root.
Well, I must say, it came as quite a surprise that the Reserve Bank decided to increase interest rates by 75 basis points. It's more than what the market expected. It's not completely unexpected, but it's certainly more than market expectations, and I think it's a right decision. It is going to be hard for the economy, the South African economy, the Southern African economy. It will have a negative impact on the economy, but it's much better to have high short-term interest rates for a short time than to have high inflation for a long time.
That's Davie Root with his thoughts on the repo rate going up 75 basis points in South Africa, announced today, which means next month we're in for just as much pain. Still coming up this evening, energy, more pain there as well between Eskom and the price of fuel. It's hard to know how we keep the lights on. We'll be talking to Ted Bloom, a South African energy expert, as well as the Deputy Minister of Mines and Energy, Cornelia Shilunga, about the contract that has been renewed between NamPower and Eskom. In the spotlight, Rolf Hansen, the CEO of the Cancer Association of Namibia, shares his story. Cool song as well there. And then Dr. Stanley Shanapinda, the CEO of Telecom, shares his views in our Market Watch. Then lastly, a follow-up on last week's interview with the Retail Petrol Franchise Association that there was just rumors that maybe there'd be a bit of a strike on the cards. We'll catch up with Henny Kruger, who represents that body, on a little bit more info on that. So a really packed show this evening, but first let's start out with the Business Flash Briefing.
Rebuilding the economy starts now. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
With your BizNews, I'm David Bishop. The rate of digital fraud originating from Namibia decreased in the first quarter of 2022, with suspected online fraud attempts declining by -7% from the same quarter last year, in line with the global decrease of 22.6% during that same time period. South Africa's headline consumer inflation quickened more than forecast to 7.4% year-on-year in June, surging to a 13-year high, raising expectations that the South African Reserve Bank will increase interest rates once again later this afternoon, the fifth increase in a row. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says while black-owned businesses have received support amounting to some 55 billion rand over the past 11 years, black business people remain sidelined and transformation efforts must be ramped up. He called for proposals on how capacity and resources can be used to aid transformation, while also pointing out that there needs to be frank discussions about government and private sector hurdles to the growth of black businesses. And the European Commission has asked European Union member states to slash their gas use by 15% over the coming months to ensure that a complete cutoff of natural gas supplies by Russia to the 27-nation bloc will not fundamentally disrupt industries next winter. This, while EU economic forecasts last week showed that Russia's war in Ukraine is expected to wreak havoc with economic recovery for the foreseeable future, with lower annual growth and record high inflation. I'm David Bishop. Stay tuned for more updates.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
Welcome back. Time now for our lead story this evening. And our lead story is proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. We are talking energy, more importantly, electricity and the supply thereof. Huge concerns as increasing stories come out of South Africa around the imminent and possible failure of Eskom. Amid news today also that the delivery contract from Eskom to Namibia has been renewed for another 3 years, with a firm supply of 100 megawatts and additional supplies should they be required, and should they be available? We decided to dig into this a little bit, and first up, Angie Skaltz caught up with Ted Bloom, a South African energy expert, with his views on what this means for Namibia.
Yes. Hi, Ted. Nice to talk to you again. So, yes, we're talking Eskom. My question to you is, Namibia has renewed the agreement with Eskom for another 3 years. What are the implications, would you say?
I think that the situation at Eskom is very dire, and it certainly probably won't survive for another 2 years in its current format. So I'm not quite sure what the content of the agreement is between Namibia and Eskom. Safe to say that it's probably an extension of the agreements that have been in place for many, many years. And they might have amended it to make provision for the fact that Eskom is more in load shedding mode, certainly over the next 5 years, than what it is in national generation mode. The Eskom internal schedules indicate continuous load shedding for maintenance purposes at least until April next year, 2023. Virtually on a week-by-week basis, there's load shedding as they take units offline and try and fix them up. The situation hasn't been helped by the fact that Kuiberg Unit 2, the nuclear plant, hasn't been refitted or retrofitted with new steam generators, and has been offline for 6 months instead of just a six-week refuel, and has to go offline again in about a year's time after they've tried their luck with refurbishing Kuiberg Unit 1. So I think that the situation in general doesn't look very good in terms of future sales availability for Eskom, and I think that's one of the reasons why everybody is now scattering to try and make alternative plans. The fact of the matter is, if Eskom cannot supply our own companies internally that are on a critical basis, I struggle to understand how they could actually give any sort of undertaking towards servicing our neighboring countries as such, never mind companies inside the neighboring countries. So, I would urge whoever's in control of your power in Namibia to urgently get the right advisors on board, because there's a lot of fake advisors getting big commissions from renewables walking around this part of the continent. Get some decent advice. I've got some people available. We've actually tried to talk to the Namibians previously and seemingly hit a stone wall every time. But it's time to take action. And it's time to get off the Eskom grid. Eskom is busy falling over.
Sure. So basically what you're saying is that we should be worried about our supply then.
Yeah, well, worrying isn't going to solve the problem. But I think that some urgent attention needs to be paid to the matter, because you don't want to wake up one day as the leader of Namibia and find out that you've got no power in your country, because the power availability is the enabling factor of more than 90% of economic activity. So if you haven't got access to proper power in a stable environment and with proper guarantees in place, I think you're playing a Russian roulette with your economy. It cannot survive in the long term.
So, Ted, just the last question. What would you say is the road ahead for Eskom? Looking at where they stand today, you say that it's not long and then it's goodbye for them. But if it's goodbye for them, what then?
Well, I think that's the question that Namibia Power or Namib Power needs to ask. You know, Eskom is now on its last legs, where the so-called socialists and ANC government is now even asking for former whites to volunteer to come back and try and rescue the organization, because certainly on the generation side, they've lost a massive amount of skills. And in fact, the acting head of generation at the moment, he's not even an engineer, he's a chemist. And this has been ongoing for more than 12 months, where intermittently the chemist sort of acts as general manager whenever the general manager either runs away or gets fired or gets suspended or whatever. So it's very clear that Eskom is very, very short of skills. Despite all their boasting that they've repaid some of their debt, et cetera, et cetera. On the ground, I've got connections who tell me that the reason why the boilers keep on failing is because the people that are doing the repair work currently have a failure rate of about 95% on any welding that they do. Now, in a normal state of affairs, you don't do welding of your boiler tubes every week on a power station. You maybe do it once in 60 years. So, no, the situation is disastrous, and it's really time to urgently make alternative plans.
That's producer Angie Schultz talking to Ted Bloom, a South African energy expert. I think he couldn't have been more clear about that he believes that there's serious problems ahead for Namibia. We dug deeper. We reached out to Deputy Minister of Mines and Energy, Cornelia Shilunga, to hear her views. Now, this is with Eskom facing frequent power cuts. It will now continue to supply Namibia with 100 megawatts of electricity. This was confirmed by NamPower earlier that the contract had been extended by another 3 years. Deputy Minister Cornelia Shilunga, we find you at the Omaheke border with pretty poor cell phone signal. So thank you for talking to us this afternoon. First up, will the looming and frequent power cuts experienced by South Africa have an influence on the amount of electricity that Eskom provides to Namibia in the near future?
Thank you very much for this opportunity. Yes, I would like to respond to your first question because my network is really poor this side. But I would want to say, yes, the power challenges in South Africa do influence the amount of electricity Eskom provides to Namibia. As of current, we have two import contracts with Eskom. The first one is a firm contract, which is equal to 100 megawatts. This is signed earlier this year. And under this contract, if Eskom load sheds, then they curtail our supply according to the stage of load shedding in South Africa. When it is stage one or two load shedding, they reduce our supply by 10%. That is 10 megawatts. When it is load shedding of stage three in South Africa, it results in a reduction of 15%, which is 15 megawatts. There is a 5% reduction in supply with every subsequent stage.
Okay.
If perhaps I might give you an example, is just to say, for example, if it is stage four results in 20%, and then if it is stage five, that can result in 25. So it goes on like that. And the second option is a 300 megawatt non-firm contract. And this contract we cannot accept if South Africa is load shedding.
Right. So, Minister, perhaps just give us an idea. What does Namibia need in terms of electricity supply? What is the load of the country at the moment?
Namibia can generate the amount locally that we are importing. The import contract with Eskom is of 100 megawatts, which is firm until 2025. But that can be extended to 2027. So currently, we are busy as a country to come up with a generation capacity of 220 megawatts. Which is a distribution among various projects and among different types of generation, be it solar, wind, and so on, of which only 20 megawatts currently that has been commissioned. The 200 megawatts currently is still in the pipeline and will be completed between now and the year 2025.
Minister, many people are worried about dependence on Eskom when it's becoming patently obvious that Eskom is in danger of massive grid failure. We spoke to an energy expert from South Africa earlier today, Ted Bloom, who says he doesn't think Eskom will be around in its current form in the next 3 years. That obviously is quite a radical statement. But I guess what many Namibian citizens would like to know is Namibia reliant on Eskom at the moment to keep its lights on?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and how do we mitigate should Eskom face massive failure, which seems to be the case at the moment, that there's at any point potential failure on the whole network? What other plans do we have that will keep the lights on in Namibia?
If I understand you well, I might respond to say we have plans to become 80% self-sustainable by 2028. And how to get there is included in our National Integrated Resource Plan of 2022. And this plan, we are planning to make it public in due time. As soon as everything is finalized, we will make it public.
If Eskom faced massive failure in the next 2 to 3 years, is it correct to say that Namibia would not be in a position to keep the lights on all the time?
What I can say is that we have a good bilateral and solid relationship with South Africa. And we believe that South Africa as a sister country might not allow anything to taint that relationship. So the contract that we have between South Africa and Namibia and Eskom and NamPower has both government endorsement, and as such, it will be negotiated between the two countries before any other action is taken. And that is giving us a guarantee. Further, I would also like to mention that South Africa imports from Mozambique, also imports from Mozambique and from the Southern African Power Pool, the SAPP, of which they are also a signatory. So as per the agreement provided for by South African Power Pool, there are consequences in with respect to bridging the contracts without a justifiable cost. So we should not really be, as a nation, be too concerned that we will not have supply because of load shedding situation in South Africa.
Minister, I suppose the question goes further, and it's not necessarily load shedding we're concerned about, it's failure. There's increasing concern that Eskom will fail, in that there will be massive grid failure. In that case, agreements are not really useful. How would Namibia find power from other sources potentially?
Maybe that we now talk to the countries that we source electricity from. Let me just mention that we also import electricity from Zambia, a 180 megawatt that is split between a 100 megawatt that we signed in 2017 and is valid until 2027. And then we have another 80 megawatts signed from that same country this year for 5 years. And that is for 80 megawatts. And then we have also another 80 megawatt import contract with Zimbabwe, which is going to expire in 2024. Therefore, with all those backups, with coupled with our own generations that we are embarking upon, we hope that we know that we are not going to fail at any time.
Minister, thank you very much for answering our questions. I'm going to let you go. I know how hard that interview has been for you, so travel safely, and thank you very much, and we'll speak soon.
Oh, thank you so much, and keep well. My apologies for my network, but I can't do otherwise.
No problem. Thank you for speaking to us.
You're welcome.
That's our lead story this evening, and our lead story proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
In today's spotlight, we're talking to someone who doesn't really need much introduction, Mr. Rolf Hansen. Hello, Rolf.
I hate it when you call me Mr. David. I'm just Rolf, but thank you very much for having me with you.
CEO of the Cancer Association, hotelier, journalist, researcher, member of the tourism industry, and one-time chorister. Tell us a bit more about Rolf Hansen. Where did it all start?
Well, I was born on a very windy east weather morning in Swakopmund, 10 minutes past 7. In 1984, the 29th of May, yes, makes me a Gemini, and this is how people know me. One day very chirpy, one day very serious, and yes, also have a very dramatic side. That's Rolf, David, and I am a very passionate person, sometimes too passionate. I'm very emotional when it comes to things that I truly care about. And I'm a very big family-orientated person, family and friends, and I think my country as well, they're very precious to me. So if someone attacks or offends, I will lash out very easily because I believe in my people, my country, my family. But I'm also, I've got a very tiny heart. So I would very quickly and easily just go into my little corner and just be. And my home is my sanctuary for that reason. So once those big black gates close behind me, it's a total different Rolf from what you all see or perceive to see about Rolf.
Now, you've said yourself, once a hotelier, always a hotelier. And you are, in fact, still involved in your hotel, albeit on a part-time basis. But take us back to when you first applied for the position of CEO of the Cancer Association. What motivated you? Why did you feel it was something you had to do?
Have you got background information? So I was a journalist, and then I just one day realized that I want to do my own thing. And about 20 years ago, I opened up my first guest house. And after a decade of doing that, I was just about 30 years old. I realized that I wanted to do something different. Everyone has these aspirations about making money and making it big and getting there. And the one morning I realized that while money is important and a comfortable life is important, this is not the direction that I wanted with my life. I wanted to be happy and fulfilled and make a difference. Yes, and obviously the fact that I got terribly irritated with a German tourist, and this lady just pushed me to the level of I was grabbing the egg frying pan and I was about to just walk out of the kitchen and bang her with this pan over the head. I realized that I was at a serious crossroads in my life. I needed to do something different. I needed to find true Rolf. And I took a sabbatical, actually. I said, I'm going to end up just in jail or something. So I needed a break. And I decided to stay at home. And I was actually going to continue studying the next year and pursue my master's. And I, the one day, just opened up the newspaper. And I said, you know, I'm very spiritual. And I believe in angels and miracles and all those things. But I also believe in divine intervention and universal guidance. So yes, very spiritual. And I asked and I put it out to the universe that I wanted to do something different with my life. And I opened the paper and here was the position as CEO of the Cancer Association. Now, what does Rolf know about cancer? At that stage, absolutely zilch. I lost my best friend to cancer when I was 11 years old. It was the first time I was harshly introduced to this disease, although we have cancer in our family, hereditary line, yes, but I had experienced death and cancer and all of that, but never as harsh as when I had to journey with Klaus Peter. And with Peter's death, you know, it sort of always left this impression of he was so positive, and one should be positive despite the challenges. And I think this is why I'm also rather the optimist than pessimist. He fought it super bravely. And to see your best friend just deteriorating at such an early age. We were both these jolly boys, and we were naughty together, and we grew up together, and we had dreams of growing up together and the girls and everything. And gosh, how did that turn out? Totally different for Rolf. And then saying goodbye to your best friend at the age of 11 and him just dying in front of my eyes. This changed and impacted my life and the trajectory of who I would be one day. And when I saw this position being advertised as CEO, I realized that perhaps this is part of my calling. I don't believe in a calling, a super forever calling. This is part of my journey, my calling. And the rest, as they say, is history. Mm. Almost a decade later, here I am.
Well, I mean, almost a decade later, and to take nothing away from your predecessors, you have transformed the organization. What are some of the highlights for you of your time as CEO?
Yes, I think the most important thing is that every CEO had their journey and their periodical charm, given what was at that stage the right thing to do. For me, it was moving the Cancer Association to a more inclusive and interactive establishment where people, everyone, could feel at home. For very long, cancer was perceived as a white person's disease or an old person's disease or a woman's disease. The challenge of communication to include everyone and bring everyone to the table and realize that it's our disease, because it's been around for centuries, millennia. But to break that stigma and to actually empower people to have the knowledge to not fear it, but to ask relevant questions and have debates. And then bring the traditional cancer association that was feared and avoided into relevance, that everyone realized that this is our collective effort to bring health care and to cancer care and to make health a healthy lifestyle and living our responsibility in reality. So that was the core. But highlight for me, I think, during the last 8 years was the development and establishment of the children's home, the Chica House. I think especially because I went through that whole situation with my best friend and nephew, Klaus Peter, and seeing what the situation is in the country, it was important for me to create a safe haven where families who are afflicted by cancer could call home and just come home to and be safe and understood. Because I think the biggest challenge that we have is that people don't understand the disease and people don't understand the frustrations that a cancer diagnosis and treatment brings along as well.
And the future? How much longer will we know Rolf Hansen, the CEO of the Cancer Association, before we get to know Rolf Hansen as something else, before the next part of your calling?
I will always be part of the Cancer Association. I will always be, whether the journey as CEO ends, we'll never know. Things happen at the flash of light these days, and one never knows what happens next, but I've made that commitment to my team, to my patients. It is a personal resolve as well. I will always be part of the Cancer Association. And when I leave my position as CEO eventually, which I think it should happen, it must happen, because transition is healthy. It's always been a decade, 2 terms in office. I will continue as a board of director member to keep on steering and ensure that we carry on with the work that we have been doing. And I love fresh blood, new blood. I think with the next CEO, we'll see beautiful things as well eventually one day. And if I do not see those beautiful things as a board of director member, I will reprimand them to stay true to the cause.
Perhaps that's the perfect spot to pause then. Each week we ask our guests to select a song. What have you chosen for us today?
It's a special song that and I'm going to start tearing up. Handsome Brothers, Mbop. And that's a crazy story, because that's the way I speak to my mother on the other side after she's passed. So, yeah.
Welcome back to today's Spotlight feature, where today we're talking to the CEO of the Cancer Association of Namibia. I know I unfortunately had you tearing up before we paused for the song, and I think I'm possibly going to cause some more of that, because I'd like to get a bit more personal. And you've mentioned your mother, and I know that she was a massive influence in your life. But who or what else has helped make you the person that you are?
Music. Oh, Dave, you're silly. Have me tearing up and crying here. Music. Music has played the biggest influence in my life. And my musical parents, Ernst and Valerie van Biljon, also passed away a few years, actually right in the beginning of my tenure as CEO at the Cancer Association. They passed away. And having to bury them and saying goodbye to them was one of the hardest things in my life. And then the death of my mother nearly broke me. Music, universally, music brings together. Music just crosses all barriers. It challenges the norms. And the day when I started singing in the National Youth Choir, I was 15 years old. So that's longer ago than most people listening, I suppose, have been alive. Our theme, our tagline for the National Youth Choir was "United in Song, We Conquer the World." And the absolute diversity in people, in cultures and traditions, in music, empowered me to learn, to travel, to understand, but it allowed me to experience compassion, because music transcends all boundaries. It allows us to experience emotions. It allows us to connect with specific times and things and themes and times in our lives that were beautiful, happy or sad, and you can reminisce, but it also allows you to understand discipline. And that is what music taught me and allowed me to experience. Discipline, but having fun at the same time. And that is something that a lot of young people do not understand, especially when in the job market, we're all so about the born frees and the newbies and the free-flowing and the tech-savvy. But I always look for someone who is free, natural, but still disciplined. Because discipline allows us to experience the good, but also to understand that there are deadlines and that we need to accomplish certain goals, and by just be absolute free-spirited and never-minded, we're not really going to achieve those goals. So while I love my bottle of red wine, yes, as CEO, I do drink. I love wine and gin. I'm a gin and wine fanatic, and chocolate too. That's why I am not the slimmest of CEOs of the Cancer Association, I suppose. There should be balance, and that is also about discipline. It's about bringing clearer perspective to one's life. And I always go back to everything I was trained when I was a chorister, but also a classical singer. And I go to all the life lessons when I think of my music. Traveling the world, yes, it opened horizons. And I realized that there's so much more than just Namibia at a very young age. But it also reminded me that discipline opens doors for you. It allowed me to see the world. It allowed me to be a stronger individual. It allowed me to see things and to dream big. And yeah, so this is why music played a very huge role in my life. I would never exchange it for anything in the world. Yes, I totally applaud the sport fanatics and the rugby players and all of those guys that were in school with me. And I'm very certain that many of them have come very far. But I think the most important thing is find your niche, find your special place where you excel and when you feel good when you do it. And then you go for it.
Speaking of discipline, you're also a not actually so new father, but you are quite honest about the joy and also the trials that being a dad entails. How would you say having a son has changed you or shaped your life?
Whew, I've lost a lot of hair. The little bit of hair I had when I started at Cannes went, and then when Alexander came into my life, No, but in all seriousness, I think that is one of the most precious moments in my life when I could literally and officially call myself a father. I always had these dreams and aspirations of having a massive family, getting married and have a wedding along the beach and my beautiful bride. And yeah, then at a very early age in my life, I realized, Rolf, what is normal for everyone else is not for you, and your sexuality is not the same as everyone else's. And being a sort of public or out there person with a different sexual orientation is what everyone else is comfortable with, was also one of those challenges. But again, just being myself always was the most important thing, and being a young and successful gay man in Namibia was a challenge. Mm. And I speak frank because everyone knows me, and I've got nothing to hide. And then especially to realize that I'm not going to be a father unless I go through the surrogacy or, you know, just having an agreement with a woman to father a mother a child for me and that sort of thing. I made peace with that a very long time ago. And then one day, this little boy just waddle-ducked into my office. And it was 2 years of hell going through the court cases and everything. But today, Alexander, my son, is my blood. I think some families are joined by blood biologically, and some are joined universally. And I take my hat off to everyone who adopts children. I honor the fact that people have the natural biological way, but I have so much more respect now and understanding and compassion for families who adopt, because the same way you and I did not ask to be here but have our challenges, the same way these children did not ask to be here, but they might be the mistake of their parents, or it might be the consequences of life that have left them vulnerable or orphaned. And today I realize that a child need not biologically be yours to be yours. Universally, energetically, spiritually, you are connected. And this is Alexander. And yes, he drives me crazy because he's 5 years old now, and he questions and he debates, and we have massive arguments. The other night, almost at midnight, Dave, we were looking for our African grey, which was actually Oma's. And since Oma passed away, it's now our responsibility to look after Oma's African grey and after the cat. Now, the cat is almost as old as Oma was when she passed away. And the African grey is most probably going to be inherited by little Alexander one day. And he let the bird out of the cage. And then Daddy had to find the bird in the house. And then we're looking for Bella Bird, and all of a sudden we all look up and Bella Bird is on the double volume loft ceiling right up there. So at almost midnight, I had to climb up and try and get Bella Bird, and Bella Bird was not very happy about this. So children teach us to be calm and have patience and to love without boundaries and borders. And my child has changed me tremendously, to answer your question. I think parenthood is one of the most beautiful things that have come across my path and my journey. I would never exchange it.
Well, you were tearing up earlier. You've had me almost tearing up while we've been chatting. So let's end off with something a little bit lighter. I know you're also something of a foodie. What are some of your favorite dishes?
I'm a huge Italian fan. Yes, obviously breads and pastas. That's why, again, look the way I do with wine. But also balanced lifestyle. And this is a wonderful thing where you reach a certain age in your life and was 40 knocking at my door, realizing that I do not need to be as skinny and sexy as you are. I cannot be that anymore. But I can have a balanced approach and have a comfortable body and eat what I want to eat, but look after myself as well. So now I can drink the wine and eat the food without stressing too much. But I'm a big traditionalist. So it is absolutely meditational and calming for me to stand in my own kitchen at home and cook up all these traditional foods that we grew up with. Afrikaans, Cape Malay, German. I am a huge fan of Spätzle, German food. Spätzle und Sauerkraut, Rotkohl. But then there comes nothing to a lekker milk tart. Mm-hmm. A milk tart like my grandmother used to make. My mother taught me that recipe. So when I do miss mum tremendously, I will start baking a milk tart. And when everyone walks into the house and they're like, oh, goodness, Chola, here we go again. Rolf is all emotional about mum again. Then, you know, milk tarts in the oven and Rolf is bobbing on the background there and connecting with mum. So I believe that fresh food and good food is part of life, and therefore I love Cape Town. It's my second home. But I love traveling through Europe and doing the whole fine dining experience. Good food and good wine and good company, lots of laughter, it's what makes me happy.
Well, thank you so much, Rolf. I've known you for ages, but I do feel that I've learned some new things about you today.
I'll wait for my Melktart and Spätzle, David. That's what you've got to make the next time you invite me to studio.
Thanks, Rolf.
Keep well.
The Business Report. Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
The BizNews Ramp is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Book your test drive today at M&Z Motors. M&Z Motors is proud to introduce the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Contact M&Z Jeep and Fiat Group today for your test drive or visit the M&Z Jeep and Fiat Group Facebook page and check out their great offers. Jeep, go anywhere, do anything.
Welcome back to the Business Report here on Nova 103.5. Time now to peek over the fence, take a look at what's going on down south with our partners in South Africa, biznews.com. And joining me on the line this evening, Stuart Lohman. Stuart, welcome to the show again.
Excellent. Thanks. Good to be here, Gary. Good to be here.
Just want to confirm, is the power on at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think most organizations have found backup these days. So
okay.
You don't notice it in certain areas. I think it's more when you're at home, but the offices seem good.
Okay. So, yeah. Slightly evasive there. let us get going. So talking about power, linked to the first story that we had a look at that I wanted to chat to you quickly about. I mean, it's everyone I've spoken to, the first question is, that's surely a joke. But Gwede Mantashe and possibly the ANC, possibly the government, somebody saying, you know what? What Eskom needs is competition. Let's start another one. Tell us, just give us some background to this. Is this real and where is it coming from?
Yeah, so the thought is real. It's been spoken about. It's been touted by, Gwede Mantashe, as you mentioned. As some of the responses are, it's choked on my coffee. We can go further and further into how people took it. But yeah, build another one because the first one, as you said, needs competition, but let the taxpayers pay for it rather than let the private companies create organizations that function profitably, et cetera, et cetera. So unfortunately, not fake news, Gary, but funny news to some because it's actually hard to believe, if that helps.
Well, just perhaps take us through. I mean, there's always a reason why things happen. There's a lot of speculation now with the end of year. The ANC Congress coming, there's going to be increased pressure on solutions for power without any of them being evident. We chat to a guy in our show this evening who says Eskom might not be around in 3 years' time, having just renewed the contract with Namibia for power provision for another 3 years. And So a lot of speculation is this political grandstanding? Is this just creating a diversion from the key issue? And should they be serious about it, what process would government go ahead to create another power supplier?
I think you've asked many questions that weren't answered when the idea was touted, Gary, to be honest. It was just thrown out, I think, as a solution. But the intricacies weren't explored, haven't been explored. And yeah, I suppose it's in, you know, you're getting a lot of, as I know we spoke last week, with regards to sort of the DA held areas looking at a power provision from individuals and businesses. So one could argue it might have been a retort to these sort of solutions. We still need to see, I mean, President Ramaphosa did mention that it's a good idea, but I don't know if that was taken out of context as well. He might have sort of said something and they're going to look at it. So, it's a tough one. It sounds absurd, but it wouldn't be the first one. I know Sandra Lawrence, she works for us. She wrote about, you know, the Rocky Horror Show and, the, you know, a little step to the left, a little step to the right. But so, yeah, it's unsure, but let's see what happens. We're going to have to wait this one out, to be honest. We can't see it happening, but... like you say, where's the power coming from? You know, is it a completely different structure? Is it based on the DA solution of businesses and individual power being put into a central repository that's then distributed out on the distribution network of Eskom? You know, they did speak about splitting it into three units. We haven't seen any progress on that as well. So there's a lot of things or a lot of options or scenarios that could play out, but I suppose I wouldn't want to sit here and speculate too much on what can do. But yeah.
Right. So if it looks weird, it's because it is weird. All right. Let's get on to another story that I found on the site that was fascinating to me. Pete Viljoen, who will be a keynote speaker at your conference in the Berg as well, and I've heard Pete speak many times. He's direct, forthright. He's usually pretty assured of the direction he's taking, and he's got a great track record. He says, and the story's on the site, SA's top money manager says it's time to buy shares with many other JSE-listed stocks also very cheap. Now, stock prices are often sort of referred to as it's the price of your goods. When they go up, it's because your business is worth more. So, that sounds unusually optimistic for Pete.
Yeah, I mean, Pete's nature is he's a value fund manager, so he does look for value. I mean, obviously sees value. Resource stocks in particular have been quite hard hit recently. So from his point of view, there's twigs, as he calls them, available. So yeah, it's a sign of the times. Pitt, as you said, is very well known, very respected. He's had his tough times as well in the past when value wasn't in favor, but it has been recently. So I think he's well respected as well in the community with his views. I think what's also good with Pitt is he doesn't necessarily tell you what to buy, but he gives you good money management ideas and, you know, how to look at stocks, etc. So you ultimately make your own judgment call at the end of the day, which is what you would expect with investing. But yeah, Pete's value, and there's lots of value out there. I mean, if you look across the board, how markets have come off the first 6 months of the year, I think it's the worst in 40 years or something. So there must be value somewhere if you've got an optimistic outlook.
Sandra Lawrence has written an interesting story as well. Here in Namibia, we watch often with worry as to the levels of what's perceived often as xenophobic actions in South Africa. And according to a UN report, Sandra writes, worrying signs of xenophobia still persist in South Africa. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, this has sort of been bubbling under. There's been a spate of sort of not mass shootings, but tavern type shootings. Again, not linked to one particular thing, but xenophobia seen as one of them. We saw a few years back, you know, locals blaming foreigners for job losses, etc. So it's something that's been around for a while here, Gary. It is around. You've got people touting it as well. You've got this Operation Dudula. You've got Lenklang Klenax who runs that operation. So I'm not going to use the right word here, but it's almost like part of, not policy, but it's been integrated into society as a thing with these political movements and stuff. You know, you've got people within the ANC who probably think similarly as well. So it is a big concern when it's sort of seen in this light and it's been pushed, you know, across the media as well. So you are seeing, not like I said, it's not what's caused or not being seen as the cause, but an increase in mass shootings in poorer areas, within taverns and stuff. So I think there's a big concern.
And then lastly, congratulations on the Springboks being able to to pull off a series win against Wales. They never really looked in any danger in the third test, but losing a test to Wales for the first time in SA. We saw the All Blacks getting drilled by Ireland. We saw Australia getting hammered by England. We would love it if you could get Rassie Erasmus to write a column for the site sometimes this week. He's always wonderful to hear his thoughts on it. He's been taking a bashing on team selections. But it does feel like there's some mild optimism for the national rugby team.
Yeah, it looks good, Gary. I mean, you've looked at the first two tests, and it's almost what happened pre-World Cup 2019, if my memory serves me. They did do this as part of the progress to that World Cup, trying to build depth, you know, use the right games to build depth, etc. So I think there's sort of a bit of optimism. I think, as you said, the third test was never really in doubt. It was the strongest of the three teams. You had the right, the first choices, they would say. So, yeah, I think there's slight optimism. I do think, though, as you mentioned, there's the North is a bigger threat. the Ireland victory was fantastic. I mean, any rugby fan loved that game of rugby. English, Australia, what did someone say? We're not really sure or care who wins.
Yeah, exactly.
And I saw the Scots lost, unfortunately, but, it's just a sign that there's not a shift in power, but a more even playing field with the New Zealanders not as overpowering as they normally are.
Well, you'd be pleased to know Namibia qualified for the next World Cup as well. They're on their way through. We get to try and topple New Zealand in our group as well. So we're looking forward to that. And maybe we'll see you guys in the final.
Sounds good.
Stuart, thank you so much for joining us this week. That's Stuart Lowen from biznews.com. You can go read about all those stories and more on South Africa's most trafficked business website. Go check it out. And that's it for this week's BizNews Weekly Wrap.
The BizNews Wrap is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Book your test drive today at MNZ Motors.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
In today's Market Watch feature, we're talking to Dr. Stanley Shanapinda, the CEO of Telecom Namibia. Good day, Dr. Shanapinda.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Now, Telecom has committed to investing 2.5 billion Namibian dollars in infrastructure to improve low connectivity and high prices. Are there certain parts of the country that are being prioritized for this, places where infrastructure is lacking?
Absolutely. So we're looking at largely our urban areas or CMI urban areas where there are large populations and that are historically underserved. So we're looking at areas such as Havana in Karatura. We're looking at particularly areas such as Rundu, which is a major town and growing, what, the second biggest town in the country, but rather underserved as well. And we're looking at particularly businesses around the mining sector, for example. Yes, yeah, so those are the key priority areas, and then we roll it down.
Now, I mean, obviously, there is still a profit motive. You're not a non-profit organization, but in terms of connectivity, COVID obviously highlighted quite a vast disparity in the country when it comes to connectivity. Is there a CSR element to your decisions about where to focus your attention?
Oh, absolutely. So we engage with our customers, particularly if you look at our farmers, and they are asking for a higher broadband capacity services, and they might largely served with outdated WiMAX services and the like. So we are engaging in the latest technologies around TD-LTE, which is you use your 4G to cover larger areas, which is fixed mobile, that we could migrate those sort of customers to. There's a big cost element to it. So some of those costs we would subsidize, or we would have to bring the pricing down And so that is what we what we're doing from the CSR type element, because we know that it would be quite a hefty price tag if we were to charge those customers fully. But we're investigating those options at the moment.
Talking about, you know, vast distances getting out to farms. Obviously, Namibia is such a vast nation. And that plays into the costs involved. When we look at some of our outlying villages and village schools, is there any priority being placed on that sort of infrastructure development?
You would have read the report from CRAN that came out that said, I think it's roughly 78% of schools that are not connected. So we've also started doing work with the Ministry of Education on the schools' connectivity projects. And so that work is ongoing. What we're doing from a CSR side with regards to schools is we're starting to sponsor where there is our connectivity needs, and also the access equipment like the computers. But the big challenge that we're facing in that regard is with power. So that's the biggest stumbling block. If the schools are not connected to electricity, then there's very little that we can do in that regard.
Okay. Well, some of your money has already, or that has been budgeted, has already been spent, obviously in the form of landing Google's Equiano cable that you did alongside Paratus. Why did you decide to invest in this, and what will be the benefit for telecom subscribers?
So the first cable we landed was in 2011. That's the West African Cable System, or WECS. That's gotten up to full capacity. We don't have any more additional submarine capacity on that. So we had to create, firstly, a redundancy route. So for the customers, that means if WECS, where they get a service through WECS, if there's a break in that cable, we can route it via Equiano. So the quality of service and stability is ensured in that regard. What it also brings about is more capacity for our customers. Given COVID that you've just referred to, the demand for capacity shot up. And because no country was 100% ready for that, and our existing infrastructure was sort of pushed to the limit and led to congestion, we can now ease off congestion, and we can have a better experience for our customers as we would route some of that capacity through the Equiano cable, and the additional terrestrial infrastructure that we would then roll out, like the fiber from Swakop back to Windhoek, in order to backhaul some of that capacity, would ease up the congestion. So customers would experience that, yeah.
There's also been talk of increased speeds due to this cable. Will that roll out to customers as well?
Yes, customers should see speeds of roughly increasing up to 5 times more. We're currently working on packages that we would roll out sometime soon. So watch the space. So there would be faster and bigger packages because now we've got increased capacity. You know, it's like adding an extra lane of traffic that we would now open up, where people can now use that option as well, where they were currently only traveling on one lane. Now it's a dual lane way. And so that would be the additional capacity that would come to our customers. Yes.
You mentioned fiber, and I believe you've already got over 10,000 kilometers of fiber in the country. But what are the plans, and where is Telecom going to be focusing fiber-wise going forward?
So we need to increase that capacity, and largely that's going to look at, firstly, rehabilitating some of our existing routes. We're connecting all the major towns with fiber. So some of the, and that's been done for years now. Those areas where the fiber is degrading a little bit, we will do the upgrades. That's on the national route. But the bigger focus will be around the houses that we pass. That's going to give a lot more stability to our customers. So we will be looking at particularly businesses, connecting the businesses to these fiber installations, because as the economy needs to grow and diversify, we know businesses need to be a bit more efficient, and we need to ease those congestion. So businesses is where we would target, and then households, particularly for needs around working from home and educational needs for students and learners that would be studying from home.
Mm. Finally, obviously, I mean, inflation's hitting everyone, prices are going up. But I said at the beginning that one of Telecom's aims with this investment is reportedly to tackle high prices. How's the company going to do that?
So one of the ways in which you do that is you'd get more value for your money. So we don't foresee that we're going to increase prices too much. But what we would do is we would add more capacity, so you get a lot more value for what you currently pay. So if you have a package that's 4 meg, for example, capacity, at the same price, we may be increasing that with an additional meg, so you get more value around that. And also, if we reduce the pricing in some areas, that pricing, you would also then get the additional benefit in that regard.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Shanupinda.
We appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Nova 1035.
We're speaking again to Mr. Henny Krier from the Fuel and Franchise Association of Namibia about their negotiations with the Ministry of Mines and Energy regarding, among other things, the dealer margin. Hello, Mr. Krier.
Hi, David.
We spoke to you last week, obviously following your meeting with the ministry, and you've had another meeting this week. I imagine you must be getting pretty tired of seeing the inside of the ministry's boardroom.
No, we are very glad to be there and be invited.
So last week we heard that the rumored strike was off. This week there were rumors that it was back on. What are some of the sticking points that are hampering your negotiations?
David, there are factions amongst us. We are different associations. We've got different perceptions and ideas. We've got different styles of negotiating and, of course, engaging. Some people feel that a strike is a form of engagement. We in FAFA, as a very strong executive committee, we are operating within a constitution and we take decisions orderly. And, of course, to a large extent, we represent most of the retailers in this country. Different retailers have different views. And although all retailers are on one page is concerning the three burning issues, the wholesalers operating in the retail arena, the banks taking a giant chunk out of our profits, and then, of course, the retail margin that must be increased and a survey that must be conducted to do it in a proper and a scientific way. We are all on the same page as far as those issues are concerned. In terms of the action that should be taken, how should the goals be achieved and what type of position should we take, there we differ.
Okay.
And it's not that within FAFA, we the Exco and our members agree that we follow the route of dialogue. Mm-hmm. That is what we've been doing. This is what we've been promoting and advocating to our members and also to the public out there. So listen, yes, they are other organizations that feel very strong about a strike. It might be a option at a certain point in time.
Mm.
But as far as we are concerned, that's a very, very last and a very, very serious action to take. We accepted the invitation that we received from our ministry, and particularly the minister, and yesterday the deputy minister. They've engaged with us. They have discussed with us. We are not happy with everything that we hear, of course. Some things we take issue with. There's obviously different ways in which to address an administrative issue and something which you don't agree with. There's obviously other interventions that you can take, going to court, take some decisions on review, et cetera, et cetera. And we think at this point in time, the door had been opened wide by our ministry and we engage into this dialogue and that we did yesterday.
Okay. Now, I mean, I know this has been coming for a long, long time, some of these issues, you know, over 8 years. But is this a problem of timelines? Is, you know, are some people saying this has to happen immediately and the ministry saying, well, we need time?
It's exactly that. It's exactly that. Yes, we from Fafa is not that sympathetic towards our ministry in terms of things have drastically changed now. We've been in discussion with the bank since 2007 on the commissions that they're taking in and the digging that they're doing into our margins. We've been in discussions with PAN. We've been in discussion with Bank of Namibia. Nothing happened. We've engaged with our ministry. Nothing happened. The same with the retail margin adjustment and the manner in which it should be adjusted as by following a survey in a proper methodology and evaluating all the cost drivers that's playing making the inroad on the margin.
Mm.
So we had many discussions and it all ended with no action. Now, yes, of course we understand it should not be done tomorrow, but it should be done with all earnest.
Mm.
And we obviously received that message from our ministry, where they said, listen, we will engage. I heard the minister, deputy minister, she's a very strong lady, very interesting meeting last night, and I appreciate the manner in which she dealt with the meeting and called everybody to order. But one thing that she had made clear, she said, you might even hear of me tomorrow. And so it's not a matter of, I think, what people are saying, government is delaying and playing delaying tactics. It is difficult times, difficult decisions, and the decisions impact a lot of people, the consumer, the retailer, the wholesaler, everybody.
Speaking of difficult times and timelines, some of the people, some of the general public, a sentiment has been expressed, you know, why now? Fuel prices are at record highs, everyone's suffering. Why is it now that the service stations or the fuel associations are sort of getting to this point?
Why now? Yes, that's a very valid question. And there's a very good answer to that. Fuel prices literally doubled. Now, if the fuel price double, our margins stay intact, $1.13. That's all we receive. We don't receive an increase when the prices increase. But our gross profit comes down dramatically.
Mm.
So it has literally halved from what it was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we were already in trouble. 2 years ago, we could already not recover costs.
Mm.
Can you imagine what is happening now? If the fuel, and you can take it from 20 March 2020, it cost you 420,000 to order one load of fuel. And you have to pay in advance, 72 hours in advance. The wholesaler doesn't deliver on credit. And today, it costs you 967,000 to receive and order and pay for that very same load. Now, banks don't assist us anymore. We come from COVID. There's a lot. Retailers literally put all their savings into their businesses, and they are losing it. You will see all over the place, service stations are closed. Last night, we heard a very, and I think that's maybe one thing that we should address, is that it's a new point that came up last night, is that we heard that our ministry is involved with wholesalers in discussing further amendments to the regulation of diesel so that wholesalers can also trade in a retail arena. Mm. And that was shocking to us. You know, we immediately addressed the issue and we will continuously address that issue because the moment that wholesalers are operating in the retail arena, volumes is coming down.
Mm.
And then, of course, pressure is placed on the retail margin and the consumer has to fit the bill. Because wholesalers, imagine yourself, you have a contract with a factory to buy from him for 50 cents and then he comes and he sells at 40 cents to your same clients. I mean, you're immediately out of the competition, you're out of the market and you cannot trade properly.
Yeah.
And that discount that is handed to the consumer by the wholesaler, the retailer can never reach. And it's unfair towards the whole regulated industry.
Mm.
Discount doesn't belong in a regulated industry, not at all.
Speaking of the dealer margin again, the ministry has said that any increase would have to be paid by the consumer. Does the association agree with that, or where do you see such an increase coming from?
Not at all. There are many ways. There's many ways in the makeup of the fuel price. You will see that from the $16 PFP up to where it is now $22.88. There's a lot of people dealing levies and fees that that's being paid. Yes, government did half, most of them. Mm. They did accommodate that, but they can do it further. They can do it further. People are making investments who are receiving proceeds from this makeup of the fuel price. And we cannot prescribe, as I said earlier, we cannot prescribe to government how and where they should get it. But it's not as simple as just playing the consumer against the retailer. That's a little bit unfair. Mm. That's a little bit unfair. Last night, one of the points that was raised during the meeting is that do you want the fuel price to go up to 26 Namibian dollars as it is in South Africa? And I mean, it's just clear that if that is the price, that should be to protect the retailers. Of course, not at the cost of the consumer, but it's because South Africa are protecting their industry. Mm. Can you imagine not having a service station near you in the rural areas? We're not just delivering fuel. Mm. We are delivering airtime. We are delivering food. We are delivering bread, milk, basic commodities. We are addressing the tourist industry. When they stop there, they get water. It's cold water. Mm. It's not just as simple as saying, well, it's just about fuel. So we must, it's a very important part of the economy that should be sustainable. And government regulates the price. As long as they regulate the price, they must make sure that that price is profitable and sustainable for retailers.
So I suppose one of the things that's coming up is that there's maybe a misconception. People see constant streams of vehicles at service stations. They assume that service station owners are making loads and loads of money. And as you're saying, that's not actually the case.
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, at the moment, and we've made that calculations and we've demonstrated it to the ministry, even if you pump a million liters per month, you are making a loss. And that is because a $1.13 is not enough to cover the cash flow that you required to turn around and pay for your loads, to pay for the growing electricity rates, water, cleaning materials, salaries, uniform, rent. Every year our rent is going up. The wholesaler must get his money. If it's his premises, he wants market-related rent. And the retailer is paying that because he's occupying that premises. So everything is growing except the $1.13 for the past 4 years. And that's unsustainable.
All right. Just to get back then to the meeting that you had and to possibly allay the fears of listeners, where do we go from here? Are motorists going to be worrying every week that this is the week that service stations shut down? Or have you in government? I know that you said your association doesn't favor a strike and sees it as a last option. But have you in government managed to work out a roadmap?
I think definitely so. As long as there's constructive dialogue, as long as there's, let me refer to it for now as commitment and promises from government to address the issue, we will do so. How long we can do that at a loss, that's the big question. And how long we can convince our retailers to believe in what we're doing, accept the route that we have accepted to take of dialogue with our line ministry, how long we can do that. That will depend on what is coming from the ministry. But I can tell you, I'm confident. Our ministry, and particularly our minister and our deputy minister, and the officials. There are many, many competent officials in our line ministry. They realize how important this is, and they obviously have different interests to protect. But I can see them coming to the table, and I can see that we will find a solution. I'm very positive about that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Greer.
Thank you.
It's the Business Report with Gary Strubel. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 1035.
I'm David Bishop with your weekly economics wrap. Namibian civil servants are threatening to strike following a deadlock in negotiations, saying it is currently more than 5 years since civil servants received an increase. Despite government having agreed to increase allowances such as housing and transport, which is estimated to cost an additional 335 million Namibia dollars a year, Secretary General of the Trade Union Congress of Namibia, Mahongoro Kavuua, says the strike can be expected shortly after schools reopen.
The situation is that there is a date given for voting. We hope the process will finalize quicker. But of course, because the teachers have reassembled in schools now, they are back in schools, we are busy also welling up the region so that we can take the action. What we are saying is that government has money, the other thing is all has money, so we take each other on each other and then we take it where direction we can go. But the bottom line is that there is no way that 2022 will pass without salary increases in the teachers and faculty servants in general.
SWAPO Party candidate for the Swakopmund constituency by-elections, Nehemia Solomon, has said he will fight for the refurbishment of existing incomplete mass housing project houses as part of his plan to deal with the prickly housing issue at the town. Former employees of Air Namibia and the Black Business Leadership Network of Namibia have signed an agreement of cooperation that allows the BBLNN to take over the case of the retrenched workers. And in response to the Bank of Namibia raising the repo rate on the 15th of June, the National Housing Enterprise has increased its prime and mortgage lending rates. While according to a recent Afrobarometer survey, more than half of Namibians reportedly went without basic life necessities during the previous year, placing them in the category of moderate lived poverty or high lived poverty. Moving a bit further afield, while Namibia still braces for a potential taxi strike on the 26th of July, South Africa's taxi industry is also threatening a national shutdown if the government does not intervene in rising petrol prices. Sticking in South Africa, Minister of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries Barbara Creasy has lambasted developed nations for reverting to coal after agreeing to phase out the fossil fuel at COP26 last year. And South African Trade Union Federation COSATU has said it will push back hard against companies that impose any form of COVID-19 vaccination mandate on their employees and fight for those who lost their jobs because they refused to be vaccinated to be reinstated. And internationally, UK inflation has risen to 9.4%, with fuel and food costs pushing prices higher at their fastest rate in four decades. And the European Commission has asked member states to cut energy usage by 15% in response to fears over supply from Russia.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
Thanks for staying tuned. Thanks for listening to the Business Report, Namibia's leading radio business show. And we know that because you tell us. Thanks for all the emails you send. tbr@nova.com.na if you want to talk to us. You can catch us on Twitter as well. And you can catch all the podcasts and previous episodes. That's on the website, nova.com.na. Go do the business report and all of our podcasts are linked there. If there's something you missed out on or something you want to share, please feel free on socials. And thanks to all our guests for appearing on this evening's very busy show. Energy is a big deal now, and we're probably going to keep more of an eye on it. We expect further increases in fuel prices as well. So we're going to be talking about energy lots here on the Business Report. Thanks to our producers, Angie Skoltz, David Bishop for his contributions, and also to our technical producer, Raymond Ziefeld, who makes it all sound so good. Thanks lastly to you for listening. We'll catch up with you again next week.
That was the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Strubel and produced by Angie Skulls and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.